Welcome. It's Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden years. Mark Levonier, your host for an hour of Westerns. Later on, it's Dr. Six Gun, but first, The Frontier Gentleman, the first episode in the CBS series from February 2nd, 1958, the episode called South Sunday.
There's a town in Montana Territory where it's against the law to carry a gun. The sheriff lives by this order, but because of it, other men can die.
Frontier Gentlemen. An Englishman's account of life and death in the West. As a reporter for the London Times, he writes his colorful and unusual accounts. But as a man with a gun, he lives and becomes a part of the violent years in the new territories. Now starring John Daner, this is the story of J.B. Kendall, Frontier Gentleman.
The journey had taken 98 days from St. Louis. I had come by riverboat up the Missouri, the little stern wheeler climbing, churning, scuttling over 2,000 miles of sandbar and rapid, then into the lonely wastes of another, swifter stream, the Yellowstone, until we finally docked at South Sunday in Montana Territory. My ticket had cost $300, which left me about 50 in my pocket, and the slim hope that there would be a letter at the express office with my remittance from England.
Afternoon. Just in off the boat?
Right. I wonder if there's a letter for me, J.B. Kendall.
Kendall, any trouble on the way up? I hear the Sioux been kicking up their heels. Sitting Bull's making big medicine again. Don't sound good.
We didn't see any.
Kendall, you English, ain't you?
Yes.
I figured by your talk. Don't see many of you in these parts. Nope. Nothing for you, mister.
You're sure? It's rather important from England?
Nope. Nothing. Maybe tomorrow on the overland, though. You say, are you planning to stay a while?
I think so.
Better get and register, then.
Register?
Over to Sheriff Clanton's office. There's a notice on the wall, maybe missed your attention. All strangers to South Sunday will, within 1 hour of arrival, register at the office of the sheriff or be prosecuted. That's Clanton's orders. Surprised you missed the signs. They're all over.
Thank you.
Well, that's all right. Wouldn't want to see you in trouble. This ain't the healthiest town in the territory, not for strangers.
Oh, any particular reason?
What? Oh, excuse me. Afternoon, Mr. Farley. This here's Mr. Kendall, just off the boat. I was telling him about registering.
Now, that's a good idea.
Dake Farley is one of the sheriff's deputies. Helps keep South Sunday law-abiding. Big job.
What's your
time,
business,
Jester,
Mr. Kendall?
Oh, you might call me a jack of all trades.
Am
I? I do a little writing for a London newspaper, you know. An Englishman's view of the Wild West, that sort of thing.
We don't take to strangers.
Oh, really? Shame. I've been looking forward to my visit.
Yeah, well, now, you've seen it. You know what it's like. So, supposing you get yourself back on that boat and try up the line to Rosebud at Junction City, huh?
I don't think so. Now, if you'll pardon me, I'll register at your office.
You carrying a gun?
No.
Put your hands up. Over your head. Fire. Now, you hold it just like that. Just so. All right. That's your baggage?
Yes.
Pick it up.
I beg your pardon.
I said, pick it up.
Oh.
All right, come on.
Tell me, Mr. Farley, how did your town get its name?
How should I know?
Well, I thought you'd take an interest, just as a matter of pride, a civic pride.
Mister, I don't like the way you talk or what you say, so you shut your mouth. Hear? Inside.
Where you been, Dake?
I've been checking on this fellow, Frank. He just come in off the boat. He says he's a writer, a newspaper in London or something. He ain't caring nothing. I searched him.
You're Sheriff Clanton?
Yeah.
J.B. Kendall. I understand I have to register.
Yeah. A writer, huh? You want to write about South Sunday?
I might.
How come?
As a matter of fact, the name intrigued me.
You kidding?
No, not at all. I write about the West, and you're in the heart of it. From what I understand, there might be trouble brewing with the Sioux and the Cheyenne. I'd like to be here if it blows up.
What's the name of your paper?
The London Times.
You ever hear of a Dake?
No.
Mister, all kinds come to these here parts. Now, I ain't exactly calling you a liar.
That's quite all right. One can't be too careful. Here, my papers.
J.B. Kendall. British Southern. Yeah. London Times. That's what it says. Here, you see, Dick?
Yeah, that's what it says.
Any other strangers get off the boat with him?
No, just him.
Well, you sound all right to me, Mr. Kendall. Just you remember, I got a set of rules here. You live by them while you're here. You'll get along.
That seems fair enough.
No man, except them authorized by me, carries a gun in South Sunday. That way we don't get a bunch of crazy, liquored-up miners and the like shooting up the place.
It seems the usual thing for a man to be armed in most places.
It ain't usual here. It's against the law.
Oh, I see.
You got yourself fixed up at the hotel?
No, not yet.
Well, and you go on over to the Empire, Mr. Kendall. You tell them Frank Clanton sent you. They'll take care of you.
And very good of you.
Dake, take a look at his baggage.
Right.
Well, you're going to search my luggage?
That's right, mister. There are no guns in South Sunday, not worn or hidden.
That's a law.
I haven't got one.
I sure am glad to hear it. I like a peaceable man. Yes, sir. A fella like you might think of settling down here in South Sunday. It's the quietest little town in Montana Territory. It's an opportunity for a man.
Well, I'll keep it in mind, Mr. Clanton.
There ain't nothing in his bags.
Well, now, Mr. Kendall, you enjoy your stay here. Anything you want, you just ask me. And I'd appreciate it, sir, if you put my name in your paper. Whatever you want to say is okay with me.
My hotel room was a palace in comparison to the cabin on the riverboat. After cleaning up, I went downstairs to the saloon bar in the hotel, ordered a drink before dinner. The place was practically empty, but I wasn't alone for long.
Hi. You're the English fella, aren't you, Kendall?
Yes, that's right.
I'm Lila. I work here. Frank Clanton said be nice to you. I'm being nice. You want to buy me a drink? It's on Frank.
Oh, delighted, delighted. Bartender...
Champagne, Harry.
Yeah.
Frank says it's not ladylike to drink whiskey. Hey, what'd you do to that man? I never seen him like this.
He thinks I'm going to write about him for my paper.
Are you?
More than likely.
You going to write about me, too?
If you want me to.
I'm Dake Farley's girl. Dake doesn't like you. He got mad when Frank said to be nice to you.
Does everybody in South Sunday do what Clanton tells them to do?
Sure.
Why?
Here's a drink.
Ah. Well, good luck. Look here, Lila. What about Clanton?
You seem like a nice fella. Don't ask questions.
Well, what about you, then?
Me? What do you care?
Where are you from?
I was born in Ohio. Got married and came out west. 5 years back, my husband got killed in a gunfight. I don't know. I kind of drifted around. Ended up here, one place as good as the next.
Is it?
Yeah, I guess. What about you? Your home's in England, huh?
It was.
You one of them lords or dukes or something?
No, not exactly.
Married?
No.
Must be interesting traveling around, seeing new things.
Oh, it has its advantages.
But I suppose you'll be glad to get back home.
Well, let's just say that one place is as good as the next.
Oh. You can't go back, huh? Trouble?
In a way. Ah, Look, your friend's just come in, Mr. Farley.
Listen, you be careful with him. Dake can get awful mean.
Well, doesn't he take orders from Clanton, too?
Don't talk smart like that to him. It riles him.
Ah, Mr. Farley, good evening. Would you join us?
No. I just come to say, don't you get no ideas about Lila.
Now, what ideas do you think I'd have?
I'm telling you.
You're telling me what?
Keep your hands off my girl, you understand?
My dear fellow, I haven't touched your girl. The thought never entered my mind.
We were just having that drink, Dake, like Clanton
said.
Lila,
you keep out of this.
Do you know that I find your manner toward this young lady rather offensive?
Well, you're just asking for trouble, aren't you?
Not at all.
Now, you think you can come in here with your fancy talk, your fancy ways, and make a fool out of me? Now, maybe Frank's a sucker, but not me. I don't like you. I don't trust you one bit.
Mr. Farley, it couldn't be of less consequence. What do you think of me?
He'll kill you,
you
just like
he... Shut up!
That I don't stand for, chum.
Kill you! Oh, my dog.
Imagine his curtain. Now, if you don't mind, I'll relieve you of these. A chap of your disposition has no right running around with even one gun, let alone two.
Give me your hand up, will you?
You should have killed him.
What on earth for?
Listen, there's two more besides Dake and Clanton. They'll get you. You won't have a chance.
I think you'd better clear out before Mr. Farley stops bleeding. He's not going to be in a very nice mood.
Where are you going?
Down to Mr. Clanton's office. I've got to have a little talk to him.
Can't go down there. Dake went out the back. He'll have told Clanton by now. They'll be waiting.
That's all right.
What's the matter with you? You want to die?
Of course not.
If you're gunning for them...
Gunning for who? I'm not gunning for anybody.
Then why are you going to see Frank?
Well, I told you. I would talk to him.
Talk? Listen, you've got to get out of town.
My dear girl...
Don't you know who they are?
Should I?
You don't know what you've done. Quick. This way.
She took my hand and ran back up the street. We ducked down a narrow alleyway, up a rickety flight of stairs, which was the back entrance of the Empire Hotel, then along a musty corridor, past my room, and into hers.
Oh. I don't think they'll think of looking for you here.
Your friend, Mr. Farley, is going to be quite upset if they do.
His name's not Farley. Clanton isn't Clanton. They're the Shelton boys.
Shelton? The New Mexico Shelton boys?
There's four of them. Brothers.
What are they doing in South Sunday?
Hiding out from Billy the Kid. Dake killed one of Billy's men. Billy swore to get them all for it. That's why Frank won't let anybody carry a gun.
How do you know all this?
It was my husband Dake killed. Harry joined up with Billy for excitement, I guess. One time he was gone out of town 3 months. I was lonesome. I met Dake. When Harry came back, they had a fight over me. Dake outdrew him. We ran away together.
And you thought I'd come after them, that Billy had sent me?
They'll think it too now.
Lila, who made Frank sheriff here?
Nobody. There wasn't one when we came. He just took over. Funny thing is, I guess he's a pretty good sheriff. He's quit the old ways and likes it here.
Why have you told me all this?
I don't know. You talked with me like I was a lady. Indian treats his squaw better than Dake treats me. Maybe I wanted to see you finish him.
It's not going to be very pleasant for you anymore.
Pleasant? Oh, mister, you got a funny way of saying things.
Lila, is there anywhere you could go? Friends?
In South Sunday?
Now, what about home? I mean Ohio.
Home? Know what it'd cost to get there? I got no money.
But if you could.
If I could. I had nice folks. I don't even know if they're alive or dead. But I'd sure like to take a chance and find out.
Well, Lila, we'll see what we can do.
Where are you going now?
To have that talk with Frank. Do you know how to use a gun?
Yes.
Well, take this one. Now, lock yourself in after I've gone.
You keep it. Huh? I've got a derringer.
Oh, all right. Here, in case I have any trouble, it's only $50.
I don't want your money.
Well, at least you'll be able to get out of town. Now, take it.
Watch yourself, will you? Dake's got a mean draw.
I'll watch myself. The Shelton brothers and probably two of their chums were out looking for me now, and I was pretty certain of that. I was looking for them, too, but the advantage was on their side. The town was strange to me. So I went to the one place where I was fairly sure I'd be safe from a surprise attack. Careful. Keep your hands where they are.
You're Kendall?
I'm Kendall.
Billy the Kid sent you. Now listen,
You may very slowly, carefully unbuckle your gun belt and let it drop to the floor. If you try to be foolish and brave, I shall be delighted to shoot you in the stomach.
Not me, Mr. Kendall. You see, just like you say.
Which Shelton are you?
Monroe.
Very well, Monroe. I wish you to walk to that cell in the far corner, go in, and close the door behind you. You will then stand with your back to the door.
You wouldn't kill me.
Oh, yes, I would. Close it, please. Good. Turn around, please. Now, I'm going to gag you. In order to do so, I must put my guns away and use two hands. If by any chance your friends come in and you make an outcry while I'm doing this, I shall teach you a trick I learned in India. It feels something like this. Effective, don't you think?
Yeah.
Right. Now, head close to the bars, please. Oh, by the way, how many are there looking for me? Two?
Three.
Ah, three. There. Now, we'll make ourselves comfortable and wait for your brothers. They're coming. Now, remember what I told you, Monroe. Not a sound.
Kendall! We know you're in there!
Blast!
Kendall! You hear me?
Is there a back door?
Come out with your hands up, or we're coming in after you!
Let's get that gag off. I can see I'm going to need you.
What are you going to do?
I'll probably have to end up killing you. Nothing personal, you understand.
What do you say, Kendall?
Out you come.
Open the door and throw your guns out.
I've got a much better idea. You open the door and throw your guns in.
Monroe, are you in there?
Tell him.
Yeah, I'm in here, Frank.
Kendall, you come on out. Maybe we can make a deal. You can keep your gun.
I think it'd be safer if you came in without yours.
We could rush you. You couldn't get all three of us.
You have my permission. I don't know how your brother'll feel about it. You want to tell him?
Now, don't do anything crazy, Frank. He's got a gun in my head. He'll kill me. Frank!
I hate to do this, but I'm afraid I don't believe you.
No, no. Hey, Frank, he's going to shoot. You do what he says.
All right, all right. Kendall, we'll open the door. Throw in our gun. You give us your word you won't shoot?
Not unless you do. Any more?
No. We're coming in now.
Well, a pleasant family reunion. The brothers Shelton. Keep your hands where I can see them, won't you?
Now look. Kid made a mistake about what happened down south. Dake didn't mean to kill Lila's husband, did you, Dake?
I drew him, that's all.
Yeah, that's the way it was. Lila knows. It was a fair fight. She'll tell you.
Speaking of Lila, I hope she's well.
Oh, she's fine. Now, we got no fight with the kid or you. Now, why don't we all go on down to the saloon and have a drink, huh? Talk it over. Well, me and my brothers have been living a nice, quiet life up here. We don't want to make no trouble. Get him, Dave!
My arm! Frank!
Completely dishonorable and most unwise.
Frank!
Any more hidden armaments?
You going to kill us?
It depends. Mr. Shelton, have you got $500?
Yeah, I reckon so.
Lila wants to go home. That's about what it'll cost. You have the money here.
Yeah, it's in the safe. Mm-hmm. Well, sure, she could take the boat out when it leaves in the morning. Ain't that so, Dave?
Sure, she could.
Get it. Ah, good. That settles the account. Now, all of you, get into the cell. Oh, incidentally, until this evening, I had no idea who you were. And I've certainly never met your friend, Billy the Kid. I thought you'd like to know.
Hey, what about Dake? He's got to have a doctor or he'll bleed to death.
He probably will. I'm going back to the hotel. If Lila's all right, I'll send a doctor. If she's not, we'll find an undertaker.
I want to thank you, Mr. Kendall.
It's nothing, Lila. Good luck.
You ever come Ohio way, you look me up. You hear?
I'll remember that. Oh.
You're a gentleman. I'll never forget you. Goodbye.
Morning, Mr. Kendall. Hear about the trouble last night?
Yes.
Sure must have been something. According to the sheriff, a whole gang rode in trying to shoot him up.
A gang?
Yep. Six of them. Dake Farley got hit in the arm.
Really?
The sheriff ran him off, though.
Marvelous. I'll have to mention that in my article to the London Times. Now, I wonder, has that letter from England arrived yet?
Nope, I'm afraid not. Mail's already come in. Won't be any more till next week.
Well, when it does come, perhaps you'll be kind enough to forward it to me.
Sure. What address?
In care of the express office. Rosebud, Montana Territory.
Frontier Gentleman was written, produced, and directed by Anthony Ellis and stars John Daner as J.B. Kendall. Featured in the cast were Jack Crucian, Virginia Gregg, Stacy Harris, Harry Bartell and Barney Phillips. Music was composed and conducted by Jerry Goldsmith. Join us again next week for another report from the Frontier Gentleman.
The Frontier Gentleman, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 2nd of February 1958 on CBS. That was the first broadcast in what would be about a 55-show run that was heard on Sunday afternoons at 2:30 through November of 1958, created by, co-written by, also produced and directed by Anthony Ellis, who is best known for his work on radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense, among many other programs in high regard. This is an hour of Westerns on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now, from the first season of Dr. Six Gun comes this episode from NBC, heard on September 9th, 1954.
Across the rugged Indian territory rides a tall young man on a mission of mercy. his medical bag strapped on one hip, his six-shooter on the other. This is Dr. Six Gun. The National Broadcasting Company brings you transcribed another episode in the exciting adventure series, Dr. Six Gun. Gray Matson, M.D., was the gun-toting frontier doctor who roamed the length and breadth of the old Indian territory. Friend and physician to white man and Indian alike, the symbol of justice and mercy in the lawless West of the 1870s. This legendary figure was known to all as Dr. Six Gun.
Here in the territory, we occasionally hear tales of the great men back in the East. The railroad barons, the great meat packers of Chicago and St. Louis, the wizards of high finance who hunt their prey on the streets of Boston and Philadelphia and New York. We hear of the private railway cars with crystal chandeliers and the great estates with stained glass windows and pipe organs in the living rooms. We hear of these tales, and we are impressed by such enterprise and genius. Of course, we too have our wizards of commerce. I myself am one. And who am I? Pablo the Gypsy Peddler. And this is my friend Midnight.
Midnight?
He is only a bird, but he too is a merchant prince.
100% knock-up.
He boasts, but don't you believe it. He never makes better than 60%.
What?
But perhaps the greatest example of the modern captain of industry that we have ever seen here in the territory was Jared P. Cale. I first met him one day when I was sitting in the Bull Run Saloon. And in through the swinging doors came my good friend Doc Sixgun. It had been raining for a week, and Doc poured the water out of his hat and sat down at my table.
You need webbed feet to get across from the livery stable.
Well, Doc, is it still raining?
Haven't you been outside?
In weather like this, Doc, a sane man stays under a dry roof near a warm stove and a full bottle.
Well, unfortunately, they don't postpone little things like childbirth for the weather.
Oh, anyone I know?
Marla Younger, out of Cottonwood Flat.
Oh, I thought the bridge was out across the river up that way.
It is. I had to swim my horse across.
But you must have gotten soaked.
I did. I dried out a little bit at the livery stable, though. No use changing. I've got to go back out in about an hour. The hand out at the barrel lay with some kind of fever. I promised I'd look in on him.
How is the river out at the Cottonwood Flats?
Well, I'd say it was lucky Molly made up her mind to deliver when she did. Won't even be able to swim it for tonight.
It's a funny thing, Doc. Last summer, the ranchers lost half their stock in drought, and now they may lose the other half by flood.
That's pretty bad all over. Rio Verde's over the banks, Dead Man's Canyon, the lake.
Evening, Doc. You look a little damp.
I am.
Can I get you something?
The usual, Jose.
Ain't no coffee left in the pot, Doc. I'll have to make up some fresh. Be about 10 minutes. Say, you hear about the stage yesterday?
No.
They had to float her across the river to get into town. Looked like a flatboat going down to New Orleans in old days. Like to broke loose and floated downstream with two gals sitting on the top screaming and Charlie Peters throwing parcels out like it was a sinking ship in the storm.
Did they get through all right?
Yeah, sure. Charlie says he don't know whether the coach will get through tonight, though. They'll have to go around south by the Platte and see if they can get across old Baldy Creek.
Well, sounds like we're surrounded.
I reckon we are, in a way.
Suppose it'll stop raining, though. Doesn't take old Baldy long to dry up, even after a flood.
Stage is in.
Hey, what do you know?
Well, they made it.
O'Shea, set me up a double of that poison of yours. I couldn't be no wetter if I was a brook trout hid under a rock.
How'd you make it, Charlie?
Well, I'll tell you, O'Shea. I drove around this town like Joshua around the walls of Jericho. I went clear up around Rio Verde and then back around old Baldy. Finally, swimmer across the ford.
How's the river?
Well, I tell you, I felt like a Mississippi steamboat captain. If I had to make this trip anymore, I'm going to mount a paddle wheel on the hind end of my coach and trade in my reins for a rudder. Now, quit palavering, O'Shea, and pour.
You know, I'd like to see that, Charlie. The Overland stage with smokestack and grand saloon, complete with faro game and brass cut fedora.
Well, it ain't so doggone funny with that little shirt-tail creek roaring like it's a Colorado River in flood time. I'll tell you one thing. I ain't taking that coach back tomorrow morning. I'll stay right here till I get my wheels on the ground again.
Say, Charlie, did you get my box through all right? Got medical supplies I'll be needing.
Oh, it's all right, Doc. I had it tied to the top right alongside the mail pouch. Lucky I tied it down. I lost a crate of chickens and 3 bolts of calico. I darn near lost a passenger.
Who'd be fool enough to ride over from Chisholm City in weather like this?
A little scrunchy easterner. Like to blew away when we come over the pass. When we got into Old Baldy, we must have hit a rock, because first thing I know, the guard's hollering, "Man overboard!" We had to rope him and drag him behind till we hit solid mud on the other side. Then we hauled him back on board and tied him next to your medicine box. I ain't never seen a sorrier sight since my hound dog fell into the tar barrel last fall.
Well, was he hurt? Maybe I better go see him.
Well, you might as well ask him, Doc. That's him coming through the door now.
Well, you sure it's the same fella? He ain't covered with no mud.
Oh, he's dressed as pretty as a New Orleans gambler from the Mardi Gras.
Same fella, all right, but well, he sure didn't look like that when I seen him last. Beats me.
Good evening, gentlemen. Good evening. Mine host, a glass.
You mean me?
Why, yes, I take it you are the proprietor of this establishment.
Yeah, that's me. What'll it be, mister?
Ooh, do I have a choice?
Yeah, barrel or bottle?
Bottle, I think. My good friend the charioteer, recovering from your labors, I see.
Well, where'd you get them dry clothes, mister? Last time I seen you, you looked like a happy sow in a mud hole.
Well, I thought it best to freshen up a little before meeting the citizenry of this fair town. I must thank you, my man, for a delightful trip. A bit nautical in spots, but otherwise delightful.
O'Shea, pour me another.
Permit me to introduce myself, gentlemen. I am Jared P. Cale, late of Wall Street.
What? Oh, you mean that block in Chisholm City where all them dance halls and other places is?
Oh, no. I refer to the Wall Street, gentlemen. The original. Surely you've heard of it.
You mean in New York City?
Ah, a cosmopolite in the wilderness.
Now, look here, you can't go calling Doc things like that. You don't even know
him.
Well,
now, that's all right, O'Shea. Mr. Cale means it as a compliment.
Didn't sound like no compliment to me.
May I have the pleasure, sir?
I'm Dr. Matson.
Dr. A. Divinity or veterinary medicine?
Just plain M.D., I'm afraid.
A pleasure, sir, a pleasure. Ah, my good publican, this, I take it, is my refreshment.
It's whiskey. I don't guarantee nothing.
It will do. Ah, lovely weather we're having. I find the practice of agronomy benefits from the rain, don't you?
We don't have none of that out here. Only crops.
Crops? Oh, yes. I have begun to get the notion, gentlemen, that I have come to the right town.
You do?
Precisely, gentlemen. Precisely.
May I ask what brings you to Frensham Ford, Mr. Cale?
Vision. Vision, gentlemen.
Is that right?
Gentlemen, I ask you, where is the future of this country? Where is the land which holds the destiny of this vast nation? Where is the manifest golden treasure to be found?
Search me.
You a prospector?
Oh, gentlemen, I know nothing of prospecting, but prospecti? Ah, that is a different story.
What kind of heathen talk is that?
Do I understand that you're referring to the Latin plural of prospectus?
How delightful to find a classic scholar here in the wilderness.
I don't get what you're driving at, Mr. Cale.
You will, Doctor. You and the entire nation when the time is right. In the meantime, gentlemen, I offer you a toast. To Frenchman's Ford, the happy hunting ground.
Hunt?
Well, you've come to the wrong place, mister. You ain't gonna do nothing but hunt for fish until this here rain stops.
Precisely, gentlemen. Precisely. Shall we drink to it? He was a cheerful little man, and he was dressed something like a cross between a minister, a banker, and an undertaker. He had fine, silky mutton chop whiskers, and the rest of his face was smooth as a baby's. All the rest of the evening, he sat at the table at the Bull Run and told us tales of that fabulous land far across Old Baldy Creek, which was his natural habitat.
It was then that I said to Fisk,
Jim, mark my words, you'll never corner the gold market without my help. But did he listen, gentlemen?
Did he?
Oh, not Jim Fisk. And, of course, you all know the result.
Yeah, of course.
But that reminds me of a similar occasion when I was consulted by William Vincent Astor on the matter of real estate. Bill, I told him, 42nd Street may be out in the country today, but someday it will be valuable real estate.
Doc had been called away on his case early in the evening, and when he got back, Mr. Cale had retired to his lodgings, and O'Shea was cleaning the bar.
I'll be with you in a minute, Doc. I kept the coffee pot on the back of the stove. It's strong as boiled gunpowder, but it's coffee.
Thanks, O'Shea. Well, that's the end of it up at the Rio Verde. There was a log jam up at the Box Canyon. Gave way. Nobody's going to get across that river anymore.
Yeah, here you are, Doc. She's hot, but she'll claw your throat on the way down.
Good.
Say, you missed all entertainment, Doc.
Somebody get shot?
No. It was a real peaceful evening. I mean that typhoon.
Typhoon?
Yeah, that financial genius. Ain't that what you call him?
I don't think so. A typhoon is a big wind.
Yeah. Well, anyways, he can really spin a yarn. Did you know that Jim Fisk built a house with corners made out of pure gold?
No, I can't say as I heard that.
Well, he tried to. Mr. Cale told him he couldn't do it. I reckon the gold didn't hold nails.
Sounded like an exciting evening.
Yeah, it was. I didn't have no idea at all, Doc, that them bankers and such worked like that. According to this here Cale, running the bank is like drawn to an inside straight in a strange town with other feller's deck.
Well, that sounds like a good description.
Now, of course, if you know the dealer, it's different, ain't it, Doc?
I suppose so.
That's what I figured. Well, good night, Doc.
Wait a minute, O'Shea.
Hmm?
What are you talking about? What did this Mr. Cale tell you?
Well, now, Doc, you wouldn't want me to violate a confidence, would you?
Well, no. No, I suppose not.
Well, all I can tell you, Doc, is that when this here town becomes the roaring, bustling metropolis of the new Atlantis, just you wait and see who is going to have the biggest saloon.
O'Shea, you've been drinking your own whiskey.
No, Doc, but just wait and see. That's all.
It rained again the next day and the day after. Doc was busy in town with an endless stream of sore throats and fevers from the cold and damp. But in the Bull Run, strange things were happening.
Hey, O'Shea!
Where is that lop-eared, swill-serving idiot?
What's the matter, Charlie, eh?
Peddler, I've been standing here for 5 mortal minutes, waiting to turn over my good money for that bad whiskey.
Yeah?
Now you're hiding a hair of O'Shea if I seen.
Why, you wouldn't leave the bar unattended.
I'd reach over and dip up some of that whiskey if I wasn't afraid my hand would dissolve in the fumes.
O'Shea! Keep your shirt on.
How do you like that? Why, a man in his position is a public servant. It's like me with the mail. Neither snow, nor rain, nor heat, nor saddle sores, nor hostile Indians is supposed to keep me from my duty. And concern it ought to be the same with him.
Now, what is the idea, Charlie, making a racket like that?
Are you still selling whiskey, or are you giving up and going into dry goods?
Hang on, you'll get your drink. I got more important things to do than dish out rot gut to cantankerous stage drivers.
Now, wait a minute. Just hold on.
What's the matter?
Now, listen, O'Shea, it's all right for me to call your whiskey poison and rot gut, but it ain't fitting for you to do it.
What are you blithering about now?
Well, if you ain't got no confidence in your stock, well, I ain't going to buy none. I'll just take my trade somewhere else.
Yeah? Just where do you figure to take it, Charlie? I got the only saloon in Frenchman's Ford, and this here town is surrounded on 4 sides by water. The only other drink you can get retail is a physic up to Dock 6 Guns, or horse liniment down to the livery stable. The only other whiskey in town is in closed barrels down to the express office, and that is on consignment to me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I reckon you're right. Well, in that case, I guess I'll reconsider.
That's better. Now, what'll it be, barrel or bottle?
hadn't discovered the fiscal influence of Mr. Cale until the next day when Doc dropped in for dinner at the Bull Run.
Doc, have you ever been in on the ground floor?
Often. That's where I keep my horse.
Oh, now, Doc, be serious. I mean it. How would you like to be in on the inside of the biggest financial syndicate since John Jacob Astor?
Not very much.
Now, Doc, that ain't the way to talk.
Oh, Shay, just what is all this? Is that Cale fella working some skin game on you?
Doc, it ain't no skin game. He's on the level.
Oh, sure, sure.
I mean it. Doc, you are talking to the president of the Frenchman's Ford Land and Natural Resources Development Company. Cale's the treasurer.
I figured he would be.
Now, Doc, you lack confidence.
I certainly do. Just what are you developing with this company, O'Shea?
Well, you know, like it says, natural resources.
Mm-hmm.
Doc, you're a good friend of mine, and I want to give you a chance before the smart Wall Street men snap up all the stock.
O'Shea, you simple-minded idiot. Why don't you just take your money and put it in a great big gunny sack and hand it to this sharper?
Now, Doc, you ain't being fair. Mr. Cale ain't no sharper. He's a financier.
I can't understand it, O'Shea. You can spot a deadbeat in the Bull Run the length of the bar. How can you be so confounded foolish about Cale?
Doc, you really think he's going to skin me?
Why, he's practically got you stuffed and mounted.
I don't know. He sounds real convincing and when he gets to talk about them railroad fellers and millionaires and all.
Now look, O'Shea. Have you given him any money yet?
No, not yet.
Oh, that's good. There isn't a doubt in my mind that your Mr. Jared Cale is crooked as a dog's hind leg.
Doctor, what? Good morning. Did I hear you mention my name?
You might have.
Doc here says it's a skin game. He says you're out to fleece me.
Well, well, we meet that sort of thing all the time in our profession. Now, don't let it worry you, Mr. O'Shea.
What do you mean, don't let it worry me? Are you or ain't you?
Mr. O'Shea, I know of only one way to meet an insinuation of this sort. Now, how much money have we discussed as your share of the capital investment?
$2,000.
Well, gentlemen, do you recognize this banknote?
Yes, that's a note on the Drover's Bank of Chisholm City.
A sound bank, gentlemen?
Yes.
Well, here, sir, are $5,000 in banknotes issued by the Drover's National. More than twice Mr. O'Shea's investment. Here you are, Doc.
What do you mean? What are you giving him to me for?
I want you to hold this money in escrow, as it were, to prove my good faith. This would more than cover any money Mr. O'Shea risks in the company.
Well, now, that seems fair, don't it, Doc?
Well, yes. Yes, I suppose it does. They're good notes, all right.
Well, there you are, Doc. I trust my reputation is once more unsullied. And now, Mr. O'Shea, a word with you in your private office?
Why, I ain't got no office, but if we kind of crouch behind the bar down at the end, we can be private.
I don't think that will be necessary, but we must plan. We have great things to accomplish, you and I.
Doc showed the banknotes around town. There was no doubt. They were genuine notes on the Drover's National, not counterfeit. And O'Shea went on planning the development of the natural resources of Frenchman's Ford. It was about this time that O'Shea found he had other troubles. He showed up at Doc's place looking a little red at the back of the neck.
Doc, you gotta give me something.
Oh, what is it, O'Shea? You're back again?
No. It's my head and my stomach. Doc, I'm so mad I'm just coming apart. I've got to talk to somebody.
Now, look, hold on, O'Shea. What is it you want? Somebody to listen to your troubles or a dose of salt?
I don't rightly know. Doc, it is the most aggravating, outrageous...
Take it easy, O'Shea.
You know what happened? What with the town cut off by the flood, I had a pretty good business going on, and I ran plumb through the 4 barrels of whiskey I had in the place. So naturally, I go down to the express office to pick up a half a dozen more barrels. I just leave them down there until I'm ready for them, and Heath Tucker takes the storage out and trade.
Now, relax, O'Shea. You'll have a stroke.
Well, I'm likely to, I tell you. Doc, if you're called on to plug up a couple of bullet holes, and Eve Tucker, you'll know who done it.
Just what is it?
Well, I went down there to pick up my stock, and that lily-livered sheep-herder has got the nerve to tell me it ain't mine.
What do you mean?
He says I didn't pay for the whiskey when it first come in. And since it ain't been claimed, my option on it run out.
That doesn't sound like Eve Tucker.
He offered me a price on it. Doc, do you know what that no-good crowbait horse thief wants me to pay for my own whiskey? $100 a barrel. Why, I ain't never paid more than $12 since I opened a saloon.
You're not going to pay it, are you?
That's just the miserable part of it, Doc. I ain't got no choice. What with the town cut off with no whiskey, I close up.
Why don't you?
Doc, have you got any idea what my life would be worth in this town if and I cut off the only supply of whiskey at a time like this? I'd lose all the goodwill I ever had. I've just got to pay that miserable old coot his $100 a barrel and take a licking.
O'Shea, maybe I better go have a talk with Eve Tucker. There's something fishy in his whole deal.
I wish you'd do something, Doc. I already paid him $500. Doc, he's got me over a barrel.
It was that day that the rain finally stopped. And the day after that, Doc finally got the chance to go down and talk with Eve Tucker. When he got back to the saloon, O'Shea was in a foul mood.
Doc, would you say it was justifiable homicide if I took my .45 and went down and shot Eve Tucker full of holes?
Hold on, O'Shea. I think I'm getting to the bottom of this.
Well, I tell you, I'm getting to the bottom of my cash box. And you was afraid that Mr. Cale was a crook.
That reminds me, O'Shea. How much money did you give Mr. Cale? You were talking about $2,000.
Now, Doc, you're on the wrong track. I didn't give no $2,000. I didn't give him but $130 till his letter of credit could get through the flood.
$130, huh? That just about comes out right.
Huh? What do you mean?
I just had a long talk with Eve Tucker. I pointed a few things out to him, O'Shea, such as he's got to keep living in this town when the flood goes down. And I think he saw the light. He told me he was acting as a salesman when he sold you that whiskey.
What do you mean, a salesman?
I mean, he didn't own it. Somebody came around and bought up a whole lot of whiskey from him for $130.
Now, who in town here would go around buying barrel whiskey for $130?
That's right.
And Eve Tucker was just selling the whiskey for this fella?
That's right.
Cale, that no-good pusillanimous cutthroat. He bought my whiskey with my own money and sold it back to me at $100 a barrel.
Now, wait a minute, O'Shea. Hold on.
I'm telling you, Doc, get out of my way. I'm going to find that high-binding horned toad and fill him full of lead.
Now, wait a minute, O'Shea. You won't find it.
What do you mean I won't? He can't get far, not with them rivers roaring around town.
Old Baldy was down 3 feet this morning. Andy Michaels saw Mr. Cale ford the creek around 10 o'clock.
You mean he got away? Look out, Doc. I'm going to get my horse.
O'Shea.
What?
I'm afraid he was riding your horse.
Doc, you got your satchel ready? Yes, I think I'm likely to faint.
How much do you figure he got away with, O'Shea?
Well, I guess about close to $1,800, counting the horse.
Well, then you've got the last laugh.
How's that?
I guess he didn't have a chance to finish out whatever his scheme was.
What more could he take? My pants?
No. I mean, he left this.
What's that?
The $5,000 in Drover's bank notes. I guess they're yours, O'Shea.
Hey, that's right. I clean forgot about that, Doc. And these is good notes.
Everybody in town says so. No doubt of it. This is a genuine $5,000 in Drover's national bank notes.
Well, how do you like that? The confounded little sharper outsharped himself. Doggone if I don't make... Let me see. $3,200 in the deal.
Well, congratulations, O'Shea. I guess you developed at least one natural resource in Frenchman's Ford.
I guess I did. Doggone it, Doc. I gotta celebrate. Boys, The drinks is on the house. Doc, you sure I can't set you up for something?
I'll take it out and beat steak.
Hey, come in.
$3,200. I'll be doggone clocking his own trap.
Stage got through from Chisholm City. The stage is in.
Charlie, step right up. The drinks is on the house. I'm celebrating.
Well, that's just fine. Make mine a double.
Yes, sir. We're going to celebrate.
Well. Say, the darndest news. Al Evans come in driving the stage, just told me. You'd never guess in a million years.
Yeah? What is it?
The Drover's Bank in Chisholm City went bust.
What?
Yeah, it was all over a week and a half ago. There ain't a nickel left in it. Why, it must have happened just before I drove that last stage over to Frenchman's Ford. Now, the big news like that, and we didn't hear a word of it on account of the flood.
He knew? Doc, he knew? He knew all the time.
Well, who knew? Who knew what? Funniest thing you ever saw. Folks in Chisholm City using them Drover's banknotes to stuff up holes in the wind. They ain't worth the paper they're printed on. Well, O'Shea, how about another? Still on the house?
Charlie, go over to my table and get my satchel. He fainted.
You've been listening to Dr. Six Gun, brought to you transcribed each week at this same time by the National Broadcasting Company.
Dr. Six Gun, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 9th of September, 1954 on NBC. And so closes this hour of Westerns on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from the golden age of radio. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.